I was born bold.
Melbourne Airport Parking. We're here to get you there. Book now at melbourneairport.com.au. Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
Oh, very good morning. Welcome, everyone, to Tuesday, the 31st of March. Going like clockwork in here at the moment. Let's hold our breath. The number, 1300 736 736. Anytime you want to have a chat with us, you can speck or text us, 0433 98 1116. We're going to speak now with Brendan Schwab, a famous football name in this town, of course. He is the executive director of the World Players Association, WISPI, which brings together 85,000 players across professional sports, not just soccer, through more than 100 player associations in over 60 countries. No one more qualified than the delicate negotiations to talk about the delicate negotiations between player and organisation as we go through these difficult times. He joins us from Geneva, which I think is in absolute total lockdown. Welcome, Brendan.
Hey, Gary. How are you?
We're going well. Thanks for asking. We're going through the similar situation as the rest of the world, but I believe over there, given that you're bordering Italy, that things are even at a higher level.
Well, I wouldn't say we're at a higher level, but there's certainly statistically the highest rate of contraction of the virus in Switzerland than anywhere in the world. But we have a very strong healthcare system here. And of course, the reason we're taking such precautions in so many countries is to prevent the healthcare system from being overwhelmed, and that can really contribute to the tragic fatality rate we're seeing in Italy. You know, the mortality rate in Italy is over 10% of those who have been identified as having contracted the virus. There's nothing like that here in Switzerland, but that gives us a sense of the pandemic that we're facing, and that's why we're in such extraordinary set of circumstances.
Circumstances around the world, of course. If we can just sort of focus on the footy side of it to take our mind off some of this horrible news that is around. Now, your role as the head of a World Players Association, I mean, we've sat through and their Players Association negotiate with the governing body over a pay cut that looked at one stage that might have got it messy, but they seem to have it well in hand. How have you handled this situation for all the different associations that you represent?
I think we've really had two key roles to play. The first one is to make sure that the voice of the players has been heard at the global, particularly multi-sport level. So we've been very heavily involved in making sure that the best possible information from the World Health Organization has become available. We were very concerned in the early piece that this was being promoted as just some illness, a disease that would cause mild flu-like symptoms to athletes because they're young and they're fit. We now know that that's not the case. This is a very serious virus that attacks the lungs, it attacks the respiratory system of people. And so the symptoms for players and athletes can be very, very severe. And we've seen alarming mortality rates coming from the United States in particular for people between 20 and 44. So getting the best information at a time when this virus only was revealed in November. So even the World Health Organization does not have enough information. And the second thing that we've been working on is at the global multi-sport level, in particular recently with the decision of the International Olympic Committee to postpone this year's Olympic Games. And the athletes overwhelmingly were informing us that they felt that holding such an event at this point in time would only contribute to this public health disaster, and that postponement was the best course of action. The other thing that's been very important is just learning from all the different unions around the world who have been holding very difficult negotiations about how to secure the short-term liquidity and financial survival of those leagues so that they can start to build for the future.
Hey, Brendan, is that apparent too in the big football leagues around the world, that same financial imperative that everybody else is experiencing now in terms of money that's available? Have the players, like the big name players across the world, have they already been asked to take pay cuts to represent their leagues?
Oh, absolutely. And I think most of the players have stepped up to that mark. There were some important discussions announced today. In Italy, for example, Juventus have announced a delay. FC Barcelona in Spain, on the weekend, Major League Baseball negotiated what they call the return to work agreement, and that involves a number of scenarios depending on really when and if the season can start. But the players are acutely aware of the economics of all of this, that sport is a very, very competitive industry. It tends to have complex economic models which are dependent on revenue coming in. And when that revenue is put on hold like it is at the moment, then clearly drastic measures. I think what's been also impressive is that there's a very real determination to see that every opportunity is pursued to make sure that current seasons can be completed if at all possible. So we do expect that the European football seasons, the NBA season, for example, the National Hockey League season in North America, they will all be pushed back, if at all possible, depending, of course, on the big unknown, which is just how long this situation is going to continue for.
Well, there's been an announcement already that the 2021 Olympics will be staged in Tokyo, July 23 to August 8 next year. Now, how would that affect world soccer and world competitions? I mean, what sort of negotiation goes on behind the scenes around this?
Well, that's a very complex decision. And I must say, we were surprised that that was announced today, given that the postponement was only confirmed last week. And I'll give you some examples. The UEFA Euros, the big European football championship, they've been postponed from this year to next year so that people can focus on completing this year's club competition. That's the economic bread and butter of European football. Next year, we also have a UEFA Euros for women, and the Olympic Games are one of the marquee women's football events. So there's a lot to be worked through. Next year certainly looks to be some sort of bottleneck. The Olympic Games are trying to get their place. They've probably secured that. But there's going to be a lot of negotiations around what the impact will be. And I think it'll probably take at least 2-3 years before the calendar starts to have some semblance of normality.
It's going to be a very interesting time. We're going to come out to our news, Brendan. We've got to get moving. You're going to be a very busy man. But for now, stay safe over there and we will stay in touch.
Yeah, same to you, Gary, and same to you, Tim. Thanks for your time.
Well, I appreciate all your input today. The Speckled Text has been zinging along, 0433 98 11 16, and, of course, you're always welcome. 1-300-736-736 is the number. Coming out of 8 o'clock, we've got the Greek god, Dave, and I assume that everyone knows who that is, but who's the Greek god, Gaz, has come through as a message with, so please explain that to our audience that may not be aware.
Well, he's a model, Dave, and he won Survivor. That's all you need to know. He's a good-looking rooster. And he played the game of Survivor as well as anybody that's ever played the game of Survivor. And I think he was a worthy winner, Gary, one of the favourites of the show.
$500,000 $500,000 last night, which was an unbelievable performance. It was the All-Star Survivor, so the best of the best. And he did a very nice job. Mo Hope, who'd be known to the sports-loving public out there, she made it through to the final three, but wasn't able to get to the final two, which was a pretty good call.
Very good call. And this just come through about Whippy Watson too. A new family's moved in next door to Whippy, and they have a boy about the same age. Whippy's mum asks, what's the boy's name? No answer from Whippy with a blank look. Turns out it was the Hutchison family, including their son, Greg.
We'll get back to that a little bit later, because it's a great privilege to, whenever we get to speak to the Australian Test captain, and Tim Payne's been good enough to join us this morning. Welcome, Tim.
Morning, Gary. Morning, Tim. How are you?
We're going well, mate. Where do we find you at the moment? Relatively isolated.
Yeah, no, I'm just in the lounge room at the moment, down in South Hobart. Up nice and early. I've got the kids with me at the moment. So, hectic morning, but it's been an interesting week so far.
Yeah, and going to get more interesting. I guess in some ways, cricket, a little fortunate that the timing of this is that you got most of your sort of your summer of cricket out of the road. I know it's upset a few of your international plans, but you did get your season away.
Yeah, no doubt. We have been particularly fortunate as a sport. You only have to watch, you know, a big AFL fan myself to see what's going on there. But obviously, there's a greater issue in the general public as well. So, very fortunate from a cricket aspect. But I think it's obviously touched the lives of millions of people all over the world. So it's a really difficult time, I think, for everyone.
Hey, Tim, good morning to you. What sort of updates are you getting and how are they being delivered as to when or if you blokes will end up going on tour? There's a Bangladesh tour.
Yeah.
Series against Bangladesh and then against the over in the UK a little bit later in the year as well. What are you hearing now about the likelihood of those going ahead?
Bangladesh is I think unlikely. I mean that was supposed to go ahead in June, so it's not that far away. But in terms of updates, it hasn't been a great deal. We're obviously on holidays at the moment, effectively the cricketers. So there's a fair bit of emailing. We've got some WhatsApp groups up and running just to keep the boys sort of in the loop in what is happening. We've obviously just put back the contracting timeline that was supposed to go ahead, I think, last week. So. Look, we're on holidays, but trying to keep in touch as a group through this sort of WhatsApp and email at the moment.
Hey, we're a little bit older than you, Tim, but back in the day, we used to get one of Mum's stockings and we used to put a ball in it and we used to hang it from the clothesline just to keep our eye in. What are you doing there at home to keep your eye in?
Funny story, actually. It's interesting you've asked that. I actually asked my wife 2 days ago if she had any old stockings that she didn't need, because I've actually just turned the garage into a bit of a home gym, and I want to hang it off the bit where the garage door opens. I figure if I can get one, I work on my cover drive while I'm at it. But I've actually hit a bit of a snag because I moved the car out onto the street. I only woke up this morning from text to NAB that say my credit card's been used, and went outside and the car door was open and the wallet's gone. So,
oh no!
I might have to.
The small mercy in that is that if someone rocks up and tries to pretend they're Tim Payne, I think they've got a pretty good idea that if you end up getting a stump and a golf ball and start whacking against a corrugated iron water tank, then we'll know that you're getting bored.
Yes, no, I'm not far off that. I'll tell you, I've been doing a fair bit of gardening, which is a bit unlike me. And so hence I asked the wife for the stocking. I thought I could get in there and, as I said, keep the eye in, but I think she might help me after yesterday too. I spent about an hour in the garden and started weeding, and about 40 minutes in, I'd cut down half a tree. So I think she's looking for me to do some other things.
With Tim Payne, the captain of Australia, is experiencing all the sort of issues that every everyday Australian is. Have you sat through and watched the test on Amazon Prime?
Yeah, I have. I sort of watched it as it was sort of coming through. I was on sort of part of an approval, I suppose, committee on... that we were sort of getting a bit of a look at it as each episode was getting done. I've watched it sort of then a few months ago, and I have sat through it again and watched it. And I actually really enjoyed it. Apart from the bits that I'm in, I found it really difficult to watch yourself. It's a bit weird. other parts of it that I actually hadn't seen, I found really interesting myself. So far it seems to have gone down really well, which is what we obviously wanted.
Everyone in the sporting world, or in general, I said it's just extraordinary. I haven't seen it myself yet. I'm looking forward to in the next coming days. But was there anything in it that was really confronting for you that you looked at as part of this approval committee and went, not sure whether we want that out in the public?
No, there actually wasn't, to be fair. I think coach won't mind me saying, I think the coach at times would have liked a bit of his swearing beeped out, but it was something we sort of committed to as a group, was that it was going to be a fly on the wall and we wanted it to be authentic. So for us to then turn around and say, oh no, we don't want that in it, or we don't want that, I think you'll see when you watch it that it's all in and you get a good look at everything. But JL wanted, I think, a bit of his swearing beeped out, but apart from that, there wasn't too much that we were too concerned with. As I said, we wanted the fans and the general public to come into our change rooms and into our team meetings. And probably the thing for me was the day after the Headingley test, where we lost that test match, and JL made us sit through the last hour of it. And that wasn't great viewing.
There was great viewing, actually, Tim. I enjoyed that bit. you may not have enjoyed it. I just watched it again, actually, and It was quite tense in there, wasn't it? And the fact that everything was being questioned, your captaincy was being questioned and the players were being questioned. And I liked your explanation. You just said, look, sometimes, your words to the effect that sometimes a bloke is just going that well, you can't get him out.
Yeah. Yeah, and that, looking back on it, obviously, I mean, I watched it again myself last week, and I think I did say to something like that when JL kept pushing on me. I said, yeah, look, obviously, mate, I made some mistakes. About the time, I didn't see them clearly, but now looking back, it was, very clear where I could have made some changes. But to sit through that was difficult. But again, we've spoken about it so many times now. Ben Stokes' innings was phenomenal, but that meeting was tense. But I think it was also the catalyst of us sort of winning the next Test match, and it's kind of changed the way we go about it a bit now. We have a much more open and honest sort of feedback, and do it really quickly as well, so we can address issues on the spot and get on with it. And that meeting was probably a real turning point in that we can now give and receive, pretty harsh feedback pretty quickly, and we're better at giving it, and we're also become much better at receiving it. So it's helped our team move forward really quickly from losses like that.
And was that something really foreign to that group, that feedback, that 360-degree feedback up until that time?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it was quite a foreign thing in cricket. I know footy, a lot of the footy codes watch a lot of tape. Cricketers tend to do that sort of one-on-one with your batting coach or with your bowling coach, to sort of sit there and talk about ball by ball, what could each person have done differently, or when we did make the mistakes, what was actually going through our mind. That was probably the first time I'd done it that in depth with a whole group. As I said, a lot of the time that's done sort of one-on-one, but again, I thought it was a really important sort of phase for our group to be able to do that, and those are the sort of conversations I think you're having always on the field, but it's sort of, for some reason, it's different when you're sitting in a meeting in front of your peers.
It was suggested that Justin Langer was more footy coach than cricket coach, which I guess marries into what you're saying.
Oh, yeah, I think he's, there's some, like all good coaches, I think he's got different layers and he applies them sort of when he needs to. Certainly in that party, he would come off a bit more of a footy coach. He's certainly got that in him. He's got that real competitive, style of coaching, if you want, at times where he can give you a good spray. Other times he's a real sort of cuddly one-on-one sort of mentor to the boys, so he's got a really nice mix, and he's become very good now at choosing when to be which one, and who it works for and who it doesn't.
We're with Tim Payne, who is the captain of the Australian cricket team, and judging from everything we see and hear, and the feedback is that the country is damn happy that you're the captain of the Australian cricket team. Stephen Smith yesterday became eligible for a leadership role again within the Australian cricket team. What are your expectations in terms of the role that Steve Smith will play in the coming 12 months?
I don't think it'll be anything too different to what it's been. He's been a great support to me, both on and off the field. I've said before, he's got one of the great cricket brains, so when we're out there, I sort of enjoy getting his feedback or bouncing ideas off him, and I'm sure we'll continue to do that. For the next little bit, I'm not sure how long I'm going to continue playing for. I'm getting a bit older now, but certainly whilst I'm in the role, I plan to use him as much as I possibly can, both on and off the field. And again, I've been on the record before saying he was an excellent captain for me to play under, and I hoped when all this was going on that one day he would get the opportunity to lead his country again. And we'll wait and see what happens down the track. And even if Steve wants to, I'm not too sure.
Do you have a conversation with him, Tim, around that?
No, I haven't yet. I think we will at some stage. I mean, the last couple of tours we've had on together, we've been probably a bit busy, and it probably hasn't really come up, but obviously now the band's over, I'm sure we'll have a conversation around it at some stage to see if that's the direction he wants to go in, and if he does, then I'd be fully supportive of it.
I've just been to send a link about a story over in England, and it says, I haven't read the whole article, Joe Root, the England captain, was motivated by the Australian documentary series. Now, I'll go and have a read of this as soon as I get the chance, but was there anything within that series that you would look at that would perhaps give opposition sides like England an insight into the success and the reasons for Australia's great success over the journey?
I think it probably gives them, it gives everyone a bit of a closer look, doesn't it? So, I mean, that's part of the risk you take, is that opposition teams are also going to get a bit of a look into you in the sanctum and be able to pick little bits out of it. But, I've said it before. I said it when we're in England before. If you need other things like a documentary or, something that another team says to motivate you, then I think your problems are are bigger than, well, not bigger than that, but you've got some issues, some other issues at our level if you need to be motivated.
Sorry, Tim. Just one final question before we let you go. This has just come through off the text. We get real-life feedback from our audience while we're on air doing an interview, and this has come through. You were a runner for Clarence, is that right, down there in Tasmania?
No, I was, yeah. Yeah.
And acknowledged as a serial sledger when you went out onto the field, is that right?
Well, I used to be. Sort of the better I got at cricket, I sort of had to tone it down a little bit, but certainly when I was sort of a young fella and I'd gone from playing for Clarence to then onto state contract, obviously wasn't able to play, so to stay involved, I was the runner and probably couldn't quite separate myself from when I still played, so I used to get a little bit ahead of myself out there at times. But
did an opposition player drop you one day pre-game?
Yeah, I did. No, it was in about the third quarter, I think. I think we sort of had a set shot and we were coming home with a wet sail. Our coach said, look, get out there and make sure if we kick the goal, we sort of get the boys up and about. Whilst the bloke was having a set shot, I started getting around a few of the opposition players and he kicked the goal, and then all the Clarence players ran in to congratulate the bloke who kicked the goal, and all of a sudden I was standing there by myself. And as they do, they sort of trotting back through to the centre bounce, and I was about centre half forward, and next thing I knew I was sitting on my backside, so I learnt my lesson pretty quickly.
That's when you just be thought that maybe cricket was a better option, and we are thankful that you did. It is great to talk to you this morning. Stay safe down there in Tassie, and we look forward to another 12 months of cricket with you at the helm.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Will Hayes, very talented young footballer with the Western Bulldogs. Wisps, who's had to work very hard to find his way onto that list and keep his spot, but did it and did it really well, and by the end of the year was a fixture. We wonder what the players do at this time when they're off and they've been sent away from their clubs. As you said, we saw Jamie McMillan painting a house. I think Brendan Lade has gone back onto the tools. I reckon we've got a fair idea what Will Hayes might have been doing. He's been good enough to join us on the line. Welcome, Will.
Thanks for having me.
What have you been doing? Saddling up a few of your old man's nags?
Yeah, at the minute, I'm currently at the truckwork hut watching a few gallop up the hill this morning at Euroa, so... I'm actually loving it, to be honest.
Is there any chance you're going to get this? I would imagine it to be an intoxicating place to work. Beautiful venue, great property, great horses. I mean, is there any chance you mightn't come back?
No, I definitely want to come back and keep playing, chasing the footy dream. But it's definitely a good place to do isolation. I'm not complaining by any stretch.
Hey, Will, good morning. It's Tim here. Is it a coincidence that Independent Road and Piedra both went out on the track at the weekend with the wrong jockeys and the wrong numbers, and you've just got more intimately involved in the stable?
I certainly hope not. I was running around the property when that happened, so I couldn't have been further from it. I'm going to distance myself as much as possible.
How does that happen? I'm sure there's it's a simple explanation, but how does that happen?
Oh, well, I think one of the guarantees in life is that mistakes happen, and especially when you rush. So they were time poor at the time when they were grabbing the saddles, and it was just a simple mistake of the foreman grabbing the saddle and putting it onto the wrong horse. And then Tom came through at a rate of knots and grabbed the other saddle and logically put it on the other horse. And with all the co-forward protocols at the minute, the races with all the separation, there just wasn't a lot of communication between form and strapper horse, and the jockeys just jumped on the number that they were riding, and then they went out to the gate. So it was an incredible sort of scenario because it got through about three or four safety chains. So it was a horrible sort of situation, but it just happened. So it's a bit unfortunate.
How would that phone call have gone from Tom to your old man? I don't think David was there, was he?
No, Dad was at your role with me. We were watching the races on TV. But, yeah, because as soon as Tom figured it out, he self-reported, which probably was the best thing that he did. But, it was just a bit of shock, to be honest, on that phone.
I reckon it would have been. Hey, tell us about the property, Euroa. We've seen it on various racing programs, and it is an unbelievable venue, unbelievable property. Tell us about it and what you're actually doing there now that you can't be running around having a kick of the footy.
Well, Euroa is our own private training centre, which we're very lucky to have. I think we've got five or six tracks and about 250 horses on the property. And at the minute, because unbelievably, racing keeps as still business as usual. So I came up here expecting racing to be called off and having to turn into an adjustment farm and have to turn all our horses out into paddocks and be quite hands-on. But at the moment, I'm actually living the dream playing trainer because we've still got all our staff working, so I'm not necessarily needed. So I'm actually just sitting in the hut drinking coffee, watching all the quick ones come up the hill. Just so hopefully racing keeps going because I'll know where my money's going.
So what time would the day start for you?
Around 5:30.
Right.
So it's not too bad here because we got no, the track doesn't close because, yeah, we have it. So we're pretty lucky like that. So we can start a little bit later than what happens in Flemington, which is normally around a 4:30 start.
And how many horses would you have in work there?
We have about 120 galloping up the farm and the rest are just building up towards racing. So it's quite a big operation.
It's a massive operation. And jockeys, how many jockeys would be there training, you know, doing work in the morning?
We have 20 track riders on the books and they're probably about the same amount, if not more, groundies. So it's unfortunately horses, it's an industry that can't be automated. It's a very strong relationship between horse and person. So, and they're very labour intensive. So we've got a lot of staff on the books and we're pretty fortunate being a country property that we can get so many good staff.
We're talking to Will Hayes. Will, training-wise, what are you doing at the moment and how are you staying connected with Bevo and the rest of the team?
We do a lot of chat on WhatsApp and Hoodle, which is a video platform to keep in contact with the club. But I'm pretty much just running around the farm. It was actually quite funny the other day. We had to do some agility work and I was sort of giving it a bit of a go and there were these two fillies jacking up in the paddock next to me and between sets I had a bit of a closer look and it turned out to be one of our best fillies called Personal. So I was like, oh Jesus, so I quickly moved a couple paddocks down and continued what I was doing before I sent her through a fence. So it's been good. There's lots of hills for me to work on. I'm pretty sure I'm going to come back in good nick because if the country goes back into lockdown and none of the boys are allowed out the house, I'll still have a bit of room to run.
Yeah, absolutely. Who can you have a kick with?
I'm an identical twin, so my brother works in the stable up here, so I'll have a kick with him.
Yeah. And what about your good mate, Zachy Merritt? Is he wandered up there or he has to stay
isolation.
In isolation? I guess he can't go anywhere near you.
Yeah, well, he was going to come up until the government introduced a new mandate of no gatherings more than two people. So he was actually going to come up tomorrow and stay for a few nights. But, that quickly went out the window.
Hey, do you think you'll all form a... I know you're great mates with Zach. Do you think you'll all form a training a group at some stage down the track somewhere? Have you had a discussion about that yet, you blokes?
Yeah, we've got a few, like, myself, Zach, and a few old schoolmates that like to just go down in the park and have a kick and try to test each other out. So we actually do that a little bit through the off-season. So once I get back down to Melbourne, we'll definitely go around and see where each other are at.
He's pretty interested in the horse racing business, though, too, isn't he? I'm thinking about a horse training business, maybe you and Zach and your twin brother as well.
Yeah, he might be the financial support we need, to be honest.
Will, how closely have you been following some of the potential ramifications of this whole coronavirus thing? Because the competition that you cut your teeth in and held you in great stead, the VFL, is under some sort of pressure. Do you fear for where that might be heading?
Yes and no. I'm a bit of an optimist at heart. Probably get it from my dad, but I sort of have educated myself with the base information about what the three likely scenarios are, which is, of course, no more games, games without crowds, and then the best case scenario, back playing with crowds. So I'm just continually trying to execute my training program best towards those three goals and not really watching much of the news because it's so doom and gloom and it's really easy to get in the trap of just falling into a negative headspace about it all. So it's a horrible situation, but just hearing about it 24/7 every day doesn't help, I don't think. So I tune in every now and then.
That's great advice for everyone. Our listening audience, there's not much going on at the moment and they love the races and they like to keep an eye on one, and if they got a spare dollar. They don't mind having a dollar each way somewhere with sports bets. So have you got anything for us that we can just alert our audience to?
I did see one horse of ours whip up the hill yesterday pretty impressively, and it's a horse called Royal Admiral, and it's running Friday. So I need to look into more details, and hopefully racing gets there to begin with and we have the meeting. But yeah, a horse called Royal Admiral running on Friday.
Righto, we've got it written down. Good luck to you up there at Euroa. I could think of worse places to be isolated given I've seen the property, and it's a magnificent place, and good luck for the racing season that continues on.
Thank you very much, appreciate it.
Will Hayes joining us there this morning. Very impressive young man, Tim.
Very, very, very impressive young man. And the birds in the background, you are an ornithologist of some note. What bird signals or sounds did you detect in the background?
Magpies, weren't they?
They sounded like Maggies to me.
Just warbling away in the background, and a little crisp morning in there, Euroa. There'd be a little dew on the ground. It'd be nice.